Have you made the coffee yet?
What is going on, everybody? Welcome to another Coffee Table Talks. I've got a wonderful guest right across from me. But first, I have to do my due diligence. If you are listening on Spotify, I dare say, and if somebody has sent it to you, this podcast being it, I hope that you would subscribe. I'm trying to build my audience, and subscribing is part of that process, and that is up to you. Now, if you are watching this on YouTube, guess what? Same thing. Hit the subscribe button, man. Join the coffee table. Also, grab a cup of coffee, because that's kind of what this is all about, isn't it, Bryce? Enjoying a nice cup of coffee with friends. So, that being said, I've got Bryce Fudge across from me. Bryce, what's up, brother? How you doing?
Man, I am doing great. And it's wonderful to be back on this. Have some nice hot coffee on a cold, rainy morning. It's good to be here.
Dude, it is. It is a cold, rainy morning, man. It's nice and gray outside. But I tell you what, man, I feel like that adds to the aesthetic of a nice cup of coffee and a good conversation.
It does, because it doesn't hurry you. It's great.
Oh, no, man. It's so chill. Well, Bryce, dude, I want to explore you, man. You are an interesting character. You may not think so, but you are. You're an interesting character. You are a fireman by trade. And I'll tell you, man, there's something interesting about meeting individuals that are service-oriented, right? And I want to kind of go down that pathway first, really, Bryce, of what led you to wanting to be a fireman?
Yeah, that's a great question. First, thanks for that introduction. I think that's a lot to live up to, and we'll see if we can do that today. So, started as a fireman in upstate New York with an all-volunteer department. Worked for an international youth ministry at the time called Word of Life, and one of my coworkers was a volunteer there and said, "Hey, we're needing some hands. We're shorthanded. We'd love it if you come out and just check it out and see what it's all about." And at the time, my apartment was above a coffee shop right on Main Street, and it had a great view of Main Street. And every once in a while, you'd see the guys on the fire engine just go racing by, and you'd think in the back, "Hey, man, those guys are pretty cool. I mean, this looks like a lot of fun." So went, checked it out, kind of fell in love with it. And I love the idea of being able to serve your neighbor. I think it's pretty cool that, you know, when somebody's having their worst day, they call you and expect you to have your best. And so when I moved here, my wife's from Jasper. That's how I ended up here. She loved me enough to get married, but not to move, is the joke that I like to tell. But we moved here, and I was thinking that I could still volunteer, and then found out that Cherokee County does things differently. And so I was unable to do that. But now I work for a Metro Atlanta department and thoroughly enjoy it and have a great time.
Bryce, that's actually really cool, man. So there was an implementation of family involved with you know, moving down this way and all of that fun stuff, right? And I'll be honest with you, man, I think one of the most interesting things to tackle in regard to individuals that are service-oriented, it's not just the individual itself that is affected. The family is involved, right? You know, when I was in the Marine Corps, when I was going through, you know, those iterations in my life, right? One of the things that I had to prepare myself for was the possibility of you know, having a family, because I wanted one while I was in military service. And for that matter, that person also had to take on the responsibility of service too. It's not just the individual serving, it's the entire family. What is it like? And you just recently had a new kid, man. I mean, what is it like dealing with a family with a job that involves this kind of service? Because, I mean, you're working like, what, 12, 13-hour job?
We actually work 24-hour shifts. So it's 24 hours at a time. And then most of us have side jobs somewhere else. So like I work for another department part-time. And so I'm gone for 48 hours at a time. 5 days a month on average is what I work extra. But a lot of guys spend 15, 20 years working full 48s. And it takes an absolute toll on the family. And I think a lot of people look at the person that's, you know, riding the fire truck or riding the ambulance or whatever, or wearing the uniform as the person that's serving, but it really is an extension of the entire family, right? If the family's not ready to make that sacrifice of time, of missed birthdays, of missed anniversaries, of missed special moments, then it really leads to a lot of strain. And there's always going to be tension in a marriage, right? And that's part of that relationship and working through those things. But I do think the service-oriented vocations, it kind of add to that a lot. And so being united in your direction as a family is critical.
Well, it's also foundational, right? You know, I think there's ways to go about this conversation in the sense of like, okay, you know, honey, I'm getting ready to do this service-oriented job. It costs this many hours of my life, you know, a week to do this, and these hours are going to be away from you. And that's trying on a marriage. And for that matter, it's trying I would argue to say when you're, you know, early in your life and having a child and, you know, you're going through that process of waking up every morning and doing the things with the baby. I haven't gotten there personally yet, but I have heard the horror stories, right? What is it, Bryce, that foundationally directs you and your family in such a way that you guys confront this issue and you move forward and you get through the difficult times? What does that look like?
I think for us, it's our, you know, it's our faith. We have a very specific view of human dignity and human worth. And that everybody, regardless of, you know, socioeconomic status or background or health background or anything like that, deserves to be cared for and deserves to be served in various ways. So my wife is a nurse. She works on an oncology unit, and that's a job that I don't think I could ever do. I mean, you have your hard days in both of those, both of these fields, and they look very different, but they still weigh on you. But so I think having somebody that's like-minded really helps. I also think having your faith to guide you is incredibly important. And then I would also say communication is intentional, right? So if we can afford it and I can not work some extra on my side job, when my wife is saying, hey, you know, you've been gone a good bit more than normal, we'd love it if you stayed home a little bit more, then we can kind of work that out and kind of tailor where we are, you know, which is great that we have that luxury. A lot of families don't. Which is, you know, another problem today that we don't have near as much margin economically as we used to. But, you know, a great example of this is I also have the privilege of leading a firefighter fraternity in our area that does consistent hands-on training and continuing education training. And so at the end of this month, we have a class coming up. And so the way it falls, I'll end up working my part-time job and then my full-time job, and then I'll be at that training class, and then I'll be at my full-time job and then my part-time job. But Brooke and I have already talked about that. We know it's coming up. We're prepared for it. And we're in agreement that it's a good thing. So here we are.
You know, man, it's always fun. You know, I usually ask these rather pointed questions at the beginning because I like to dig down on the individual and kind of truly start to understand them at the beginning of the conversation, which is, oh, you know, that makes sense. But it's a little bit more to it than that, right? When I talk to individuals, and typically with my podcast, it's political in nature, right? I have some political individuals come on and we'll talk about them as a character within politics. And what I've come to find, Bryce, is there's individuals who involve themselves in politics because they're involved with politics. But there's individuals who involve themselves in politics because they're service-oriented individuals. And there's things that you can pick up on with that, right? If you talk to an individual and they are just in a position to be in a position, right? I'm not saying that that's a bad thing necessarily, but it's drastically different than the individual who orients themselves towards service. And that's on the surface level, your work, right? Your fireman, both your wife being in a service-oriented industry as well. But for that matter, it's foundational. Something you said while you were talking about the foundation of your faith is also service-oriented. Now, that's really important. I want to expound upon that, right? It doesn't just come out of nowhere. There is this innate feature of wanting to be service-oriented, I think, with service-oriented individuals. I want to kind of go back to your childhood. I'm like a therapist, man. I want to go back to your childhood. Let's talk about these things. Where do you think this want to serve came from? When you think about it, let's think about like what maybe your dad instilled in you, or maybe your mom instilled in you. Where did this come from, man?
That's a great question. I don't know that I have the perfect answer to it, because like when you visit a therapist, most of the questions they ask you, you don't have an answer for the first time. I don't know. I think it came from family. My dad definitely instilled in us a strong Protestant work ethic. I like to joke. I had no idea what Saturday morning cartoons were until I went to college. My first Saturday at college, they were like, "Hey, we're gonna go down and watch Saturday morning cartoons at the cafeteria. You want to go?" I was like, "What are Saturday morning cartoons?" Anyway, so I grew up on a beef ranch in Florida. And so I think, you know, having that work ethic is important. Knowing that work is valuable, that work is a responsibility. You know, it's an outpouring of the gifts and abilities that you've been given, as well as the trade that you've learned and you've acquired in the vocation and the direction that the Lord has given you to work. So I think that's part of it. And then too, I think for me, really the seminal moment. So I grew up in Florida, in Plant City, halfway between Tampa and Orlando. Strawberries, cows, that was about it growing up. But then, like I said, I worked for that international nonprofit or youth ministry out of upstate New York. And it's a Bible college camp and camping ministry. And they reach youth through three ways, through Bible institutes, through camps, and through partnerships with their local churches. And I went to a Bible institute in Florida. That's one of their schools. It was a phenomenal experience. It was a great gap year program. And then I got asked to be on a leadership development team that they had. And it was basically 12 dudes that traveled in a van for a year. And I did not sing. I was the tech guy. But we would sing and promote the college and the camps and that type of stuff in Christian schools and churches all over the eastern United States. And then I got asked to lead a new team that was doing basically the same thing for 2 years. So over the course of those 3 years, we traveled like 300,000 miles. I probably stayed in 600 different homes, as far north as Maine, far south as Florida, as far east as Mississippi. And just listening to people talk about what was on their hearts, what was going on in their lives and the things that they were struggling with and things that they were working through. I realized that across the U.S., there's common threads and common themes. We just express those pains and those difficulties a little slightly different based off our geographic location. But I think that's really where I got my heart for people and my desire to help people, because you see individuals that are trying to do the right thing, they're putting their shoulder to the grindstone and their nose to the wheel, and they're just not getting ahead. And for a variety of reasons, it could be because the job that they're working, it just got outsourced to Canada or to Mexico or to China. Or their kid that was doing well in school is now struggling in school because they're disconnected from their teachers and they're having a learning disability. It's just, I think there's a lot of things that plague the American individual that are outside of his or her control. And I don't think, you know, by no means does the government need to come in and fix those things. But I do think the government can take some of the weight off of their shoulders, you know, expanding child tax credits, making college tuition tax deductible, things like that, that are just, to me, are no-brainers that increase limited government, they kind of scale back the scope of the Fed, but also, you know, give those individuals some room to breathe.
Yeah. You know, Bryce, in my opinion, we want to maintain the nature of meritocracy in America, right? I think that is the utmost important thing. But, you know, I want to expound upon this a little bit, because with the youth, as I observe it, right, you know, between the Marine Corps, my experiences there, moving into college and the college environment and dealing with Gen Z, they're very quick to complain. And I don't mean that in, oh, like, gosh, they're complaining, geez. As much as it is, I feel like they are being taught in the collegiate system, maybe a little later in high school, that the system exists to work against you, right? You should just complain about it. Be angry about it, right? Don't try and work yourself out of a situation, right? Just complain about it and change the system to placate to you. And I think that's something very scary that's on the popular movement within youth, right? Is they want to see government intervention rather than self-intervention to get themselves out of a hole. Is that something that you've kind of observed, or at least are observing?
Yeah, I think so. And to quote the great Joe Pesci from that cinema masterpiece, to quote the great Joe Pesci, I'm just going to try this whole thing again. to quote the great Joe Pesci from that cinema masterpiece, My Cousin Vinny, the Utes these days I don't think the issue is necessarily on the individual, although the individual needs to take responsibility. I think that the issue is society and culture as a whole has told them that the world revolves around them. And we have this idea that the good life is a life free of suffering, free of sacrifice, free of hardship. And that's not true, right? You know this from your experience in the Marine Corps. Some of the greatest joys in life come on the other end of suffering, right? And we don't understand that as a society. And so what do we do when things don't go our way? We complain and we don't try and work through it. You know, there's that reel that's going around, that's been around for a while with Michael Caine talking about embracing the difficulty, right? And that you need to use that difficulty to your advantage. And I think that's something that we miss. But again, I think it's hard because, you know, it's not just with the youth, right? Like I was in a group of Republican adults recently, and we were talking about later in life care with long-term care facilities and things like that. And some of the strain that they add to the local economy and to the local infrastructure and all of those things. And the answer that I gave, you know, I'm very thankful to live in a multi-generational home right now. I have older members of my family that live with us. And it has been a huge blessing on my kids. I mean, just to see the development differential in my daughter is crazy. And it's good for the people that live with us. I don't want to give away too much, but for the people that live with us, it's been really good for them as well. So I gave this as an example in this Republican group, you know, that, well, maybe part of the way to relieve this is to have an extension of the nuclear family where, you know, we continue to work together and live together as families. And they basically laughed me out of the room and said, no, the government needs to step in and do more. And I was like, no, we're Republicans. The government is never the answer to the problem. But I think we've lost a lot of these things. A lot of these ties that bind us have gone away out of a misunderstanding of the American individual.
Yeah, man. You know, that used to be culture, Bryce. The culture used to be you work with your family and you work towards the American dream. And then you kind of stand up with those that went before you, right? The shoulders of giants was kind of the concept. And those giants were your family. I'll give you a great example. It's like my parents is a great example. My mom and my dad both worked two jobs early in our family life. We were poor, dude. We were super poor, you know? But dang it, my dad was like, I'm not going to be this way. I'm not going to continue this way. I'm going to work hard and work hard, work hard. So you've got two people that graduated high school and that's it. That's all they had. They didn't have a college degree. My mom tried, but she was like, So now you fast forward to myself and my sister. My sister, you know, graduated with a nursing degree. Their son, me, went into the Marine Corps, right, and did what I did. And now I came out and then I graduated with a degree in political science, totally a true degree, you know, totally a science, right? Point being, we're increasing the worth of our family, right? We're creating this system of family where we're able to progress. It's called the American dream. And that's what's so beautiful. And that is conservative. Now, something that I'm worried about, much to your point, is when I go and talk to these kids, right? You know, I've you know, been able to go and talk to the college the college conservative crowd. And they've observed the leftist culture their entire life, man. I want you to kind of imagine this, right? I want you to imagine, like, especially in this most recent generation, Gen Z, you know, screens in front of them all the time, especially with a culture of leftivism that is attached to every form of media that we have, whether it be TV, on your Apple, whatever product, because everybody's got a flipping Apple nowadays. You know, it's everywhere. Right? It's inundating you, telling that you are bad, you are conservative, and you are bad, you are Christian, you are bad, you are male, and you are bad, right? And, you know, if you're a Democrat and watching this and laughing, you should check up on some stuff, because that's real. But these kids are so inundated by it, and they hate it, and they resent it, right? So they say, okay, well, if the left is going to keep pushing, well, how can I get back at the left? Ah, well, I can intervene with government. Certainly, right? So now you're seeing a conservative youth that is kind of growing up wanting to hit back against this leftist culture. It's not their proclivity to say, I'm just going to create antithesis right-leaning culture. I'm going to utilize government intervention to prevent leftist culture from propagating, which doesn't sound like a bad thing, but it's a route, in my opinion, to a very unhealthy way of going about things, because it's saying, as a conservative, that I want to implement more government. So to your point with the adult thing, yeah, I'm also seeing it on a youth level. I think that's a topic that needs to get discussed. Yeah, man. Wow. I did not know that adults were kind of talking about that way. I mean, what do you think about that?
Yeah, so there's a ton of good stuff there that you just talked about. So I think there's a number of problems that are all related. So one, I think we have a You mentioned the fact that you grew up poor, but what a rich heritage you have of seeing your family work through all of that, right? That is a gift that a lot of people don't get. And so I think we often equate, again, we go back to defining what is the good life, right? We often equate financial success with success in life, and that just isn't the case, right? You could win the lottery tomorrow and be a total bum and not be successful in life, but you could die a millionaire. And so I think reorienting some of those values of what what does it mean to build, a better life for your kids? It isn't always financial. While that is a part of it, that is not always the core of it. I think too, the reorientation of society to around retirement, right? So retirement is a new thing. Retirement was not a thing before the 50s, before the post-war period, right? You didn't just grow up and work, and then your goal was, oh, at 50, I'm going to go hit the golf links, and I'm going to be there for the rest of my life, and I'm going to travel and do what I want. No, like you still have so much to offer, so much to give to your kids, to your family, to society, to your neighbors. And so I think it's an abdication of those responsibilities that we have as Americans. De Tocqueville, when he came and wrote Democracy in America, right? He said the thing that set us apart was our love for our neighbor. And I think we look at neighborhoods today and there's been a massive shift, right? We have way more garage doors than we have front porches. And we don't have a place to sit in your neighborhood and interact with your neighbors. Maybe you'll see them in the yard every once in a while, or you yell at them on Facebook when the HOA says something you don't like, or, you know, their dog gets out or poops in your lawn and now you're upset with them. But we don't engage with our neighbors in a meaningful way. And that's because we don't have margin in our lives, because we work a job that starts at 7 and we come home at 6. And now we don't want to go to the bowling league, and we don't want to go to the PTA, and we don't want to go to the scout meeting because we're tired, because we're consistently fighting for this financial success that we think is going to lead to the achievement of that American dream of us owning our own home and maybe having some property and being able to travel and go to the golf course. So I think we need to reorient what we believe the good life is in a more true and objectively formed way. And then on the government expansion piece, I think we're seeing we equate experience today with knowledge, right? So every time you see one of these active shooter situations, horrible as they are, there's always somebody that was there. Normally it's a kid from one of the high schools that now becomes a content matter expert on gun reform. And they may have a really firsthand knowledge of these events that no one else has. And they can speak to that at a deep level. But that doesn't naturally equip them to speak on technical terms and technical ways on these reform pieces. So I think that's something the left has fostered that the right has picked up, right? So you have these students that are seeing all of this war on true manhood, on the good, and they're saying we don't want this, and we're going to fight back like you talked about. But I think the lesson that we need to take is from Trey Gowdy, who, when he left Congress and kind of his exit interview, if you will, he really hit on the fact that the way we accomplish things matters, right? The way you get somewhere is important. Process is crucial. Process matters. And we're seeing a shift in the Republican Party away from conservatism to nationalism. And nationalism is a good thing, right? You need a national identity. You need those things, those ties that bind us together as a nation. But when the national identity is this being created on the right, is we're going to burn down everything on the left, and we're going to avoid these institutions. Like, when was it? And I hate to get too far down this rabbit hole, because this is what we're talking about right now on the podcast I'm working with, and so that's why it's fresh in my mind. But when was the last time you had a conservative dad tell his kid that he needs to go get a good education and then become a career bureaucrat in the State Department? Never. You don't hear that today. And so we're forfeiting these institutions to the left because we're in this bring everybody in, burn it down, get rid of everything, and just start over. And it's a bad mindset to have.
It's a bad mindset, man. I agree with that. It's difficult though, Bryce, because you're dealing. It's like, okay, we go back to the psychiatry, right? You know, it's like, oh, please tell me your woes. You know, you're dealing with individuals that are hurt, that are fundamentally hurt. There's hurting people superficially. But then there's dealing as a young conservative, dealing with somebody telling you that your fundamental faith in Christianity is wrong and is a disgusting plague on society. Dude, that is foundational. That is a deep, 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 deep cut.
It is, but it is the core of what Christianity is about, right? Like that's been the pushback against Christianity since the beginning, right? Christians in America have become incredibly soft because we're used to a pluralistic religious freedom that just hasn't existed around the world in times past. And so this is why, again, going down the rabbit hole of institutions, the institution of the church is so crucial. If your church is not forming and filling these everybody, whether it's the youth or the adults, to engage well with culture from a place of a strong relationship with Christ, then they will be discouraged by those things. But those things you should wear as a badge of honor. When somebody calls you a crazy Christian, like, that means you're doing something right, right? Like, Christians should be different. You shouldn't be weird different. Well, I say that, but, you know, that was probably true 20 years ago. Now with our culture as weird as our culture is, you know, that's probably where you are. I think I'm reminded, I can't remember who made the quote, and so I'll claim it as my own, but the last rebellion is orthodoxy. Right. And so we've rebelled so hard as a culture against everything that now we see a lot of students and a lot of individuals trying to come back to what is objectively true.
Yeah, man, it is fascinating to watch all of this go about. And I'll be honest with you, Bryce, I'll be honest with you. What I think we need is good mentorship. I really do. You know, if we're talking about the conservative ranks, if we're talking about the conservative youth, right, I think the conservative youth needs good mentorship. Now, what is that? Why is that, for that matter? You talk about how the conservative young fella is going in a more emotional route, reactive, right? It's wanting to react and demolish the left, right? Which sounds sexy, right? It's like, oh yeah, let's go to war, baby, right? You know, but not quite so. And the reason why I take issue to that is because that is the left. Right, that was their intent. They wanted to demolish, and they're kind of in the process of doing that culturally. But the issue that I have is that the right-leaning kid is also going to the same school the left-leaning kid is going to, and arguably, objectively speaking, we have observed Marxist-type education occurring in our school system. Right, more socialistic viewpoints, and that's of course deriving from college, and that is a whole topic of conversation. But the issue is this. This youth is still involved with this Marxist type of teaching in schools, right? They may be conservative, but they're still picking up these tendencies of this Marxist push, right? So they're not being taught to objectively think about things. They're being taught to follow the leader, right? So, hey, we're going to have this one little idea that we're going to lead ourselves on here, and we're just going to vehemently go after that. We're not going to think about it. We're just going to idealistically follow it, right? And I think that's something that is going to come up later. I think we as conservatives kind of need to start addressing that because it's foundational as well. It's like a foundational education thing. We're not raising educational objective thinkers. We're raising followers. We're not raising leaders. We're raising followers. I think, yeah, man, wow, that is a whole topic. That might be the next topic of discussion next time we talk.
Yeah, and I'll give you a quick anecdote on that. So I think, one, you know, we go back to what is the core purpose of conservatism? It's to own the libs, right? Like, that's the goal. But this is not, and this is where I think it's tricky. This is a fight up and down the age gap, right? Or up and down the ages, right? It's from kids to adults. So I was a 11th district committee member through the party. So if you're not familiar with the party system, there's the county parties, and then you have a district committee, which is represents the congressional district as a whole, and it's made up of representatives from the different county parties. So I was a member of that committee for 2 years. We raised a lot of money. We got Republicans elected. We did a lot of good things. Comes county convention 2 years later, and there was basically a hostile takeover of the Cherokee County Republican Party, as there is, you know, every 2 to 4 years in Cherokee County, because we're that red, we can do that. But the thing that I thought was unique about this one that was a little bit different was when it came time for, so I had sat there as a member all day, you know, voting, whatever, talking with people around me. Got to know this wonderful lady who's one of my neighbors. She lives in my neighborhood. We hit it off. We had good conversations. We felt like we were aligned in a lot of areas. And turns out she was the person that they had put up to run against me and for my seat. And she didn't realize that I was the person she was running against until it's like, oh, well, we're running for the same thing. And she goes, really? I had no idea. I think it sounds like you would do a fine job. And it sounds like you've done a good job. I don't know why I would run against you. And so she went to the person that was the lady that was kind of running their caucus. And the lady flat out said, no, if they were here before, they're gone. Like, it doesn't matter who they are, what they are, you're running against them. And she just blindly followed and said, yeah, I'll do it. No problem. And I kind of phoned in my speech at that point, just because I was very frustrated with that whole process and just didn't see a path forward there. But it was just striking to me the groupthink that has overtaken a lot of these current movements. And I'm, you know, I have no problems voting for President Trump in this cycle whatsoever. But there's now, it seems, a test that you have to take every time you want to be involved politically of how much of a Trump supporter are you? And if you don't level up enough, if you want to criticize anything he's ever done, if you want to criticize any comment he's ever made, you're out. And it's just, to me, this is exactly what we fought the Cold War against, right? This is what the left does. This is what the left is good at, and this is what we've said is unacceptable for a very long time. And now we're seeing this in our midst, and it's welcomed with open arms.
Yeah, man, it is a whole topic. It's a hostile environment, and I say that because I want to be true, right? You know, we have the ability to be on this platform, and we can critique and stuff like that, because we're going to agree. I would rather talk about this subject with somebody that disagrees with me, because I think something would come from it. But I can give you an experience, Bryce. I want to give you an experience that you can at least think about, right? So I started the College Republicans at KSU, okay? And thinking about the way things work in succinct, okay, you know, we're going to move up the chain of command, et cetera, and that way we have a whole view. We have the youth, and then we have the county party, and then we have the state party, right? It's like, well, the next step is to get my College Republicans involved with county party. At the time, this wasn't county leadership. These were just individuals that were within the county party. So I take my KSU College Republicans to a county event, and they come back to me. I think it was the next day we had a follow-up meeting about the event, and two of them quit. And I was like, well, why are you guys quitting? He was like, I don't want to be involved with that. I'm like, well, what do you mean that, right? They were taken aside by three separate people, these two individuals, right? Three separate times, three separate people. And these three separate people told them, this is who you need to talk to. You don't need to talk to this person. That person's bad. You need to talk to this person. And the three separate people were talking about each other. So this person was saying, you don't need to talk to that person. So then the kid would go over to that person like, oh, yeah, you don't need to talk to that person because that person's bad and he has these ideas. We're eating our own, dude. We're eating our own. You know, it's, oh, God, I'm sorry. I just get so annoyed because I lost two members of my group that were actually really wanting to get involved. And they were good kids. But because they were involved with this environment of nah, you know, they've had enough of it at their home. They were like, we don't want to deal with it outside of home. You know, we're already dealing with this kind of stuff.
Yeah, and
you know?
It's because as a society, we've lost the ability to disagree well. Right. And we, especially as conservatives, especially as Republicans, we should be able to sit down and say, look, this is where we agree on policy, and this is where we're going to push the ball forward. This is where we disagree on policy, and we're going to have it out, and it's going to be really good. And we're going to get heated, and we're going to have fun, and we're going to debate these ideas. And then at the end of the day, because we've agreed to this form of government, we're going to move forward with what the group says is best, but we're not going to throw someone out of the group because they disagree, right? That's the problem. The problem is the expulsion and the saying, don't talk to this person, don't talk to them because their ideas are dangerous. Like, are you kidding me? Like, that's the whole reason we're conservative Republicans, is because we want to argue those ideas, and we don't think that any idea is off the table, right? We're gonna talk about it, because John Stonestreet likes to say ideas have consequences and bad ideas have victims. And right now we are seeing bad ideas played out.
At the end of the day, love thy neighbor.
Absolutely.
Bryce, dude, unfortunately, I am not popular enough to hold a 3-hour conversation and people will stay and watch. We have reached the limit of the show. Buddy, it was good having you on, man. I wouldn't be a good host, though, Bryce, if I didn't allow you some time to plug your podcast. You've got to talk about your podcast and what you guys are going to be talking about this upcoming season.
Yeah, that's very kind of you. So our podcast is called The Way Forward with Bryce Futch. You might have your face on your mug, but I have my name in the title. So our ego plays out in different ways. So we like to take big policy ideas and break them down and talk about why they matter locally, right? So big ideas, small government's kind of our tagline. The first season we did was on China. So why should someone in North Georgia care about Chinese intellectual property theft, human rights abuses, international trade with them, et cetera? We went in some really good detail. We had some great, great scholars come on and join us as guests. All of those are out right now anywhere you where you get your podcasts. Season two is on human flourishing. What is it? Why does it matter to you? How do we help create it? What are, when we kind of take that through the institutions that God created, family, church, government. What is the right role of each of those? How do they work with each other, et cetera? So it's a great time. My co-host is Father Spencer Amaral. He's the priest at Incarnation Anglican Church, which is where I attend. We currently meet over at I think it's Canton First United Methodist off exit 16. We meet in the evenings there. But yeah, so it's a great conversation. You should start seeing some previews for that coming out here in a couple of weeks, and season two will be hot coming up.
Awesome. Well, Bryce, thank you so much for being a fun guest, man. And I reckon we'll see you next time, buddy. Cheers. Yeah, it was a good little coffee talk, man.